The Vintage Gamer, Episode 27, The Fool's Errand.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Hello, and welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. Each episode, I take a look at a game from the past, a board game, computer game, or role-playing game. If you like what you hear, you can download more episodes or subscribe to this show at www.thevintagegamer.net. Well, the big news this episode is that this is my one-year anniversary. Well, technically, it's my one-year and one-week anniversary. Due to Christmas week being a little too crazy, I didn't have the time to do the podcasting and game playing that I had planned, so I'm running a little behind. Okay. The real truth is that we got a Wii, one of the Nintendo Wii, and we were playing that and some Xbox games all week. Not much of the vintage gaming there, but we did have a lot of fun, and it was all gaming fun, too. By the way, if you do have an Xbox 360, I highly recommend Viva Pinata. It is truly addictive. And the Wii Sports game is also truly addictive as well. Tried a little bit of Zelda, but we spend most of our time playing Wii Sports. But anyway, hey, happy birthday to the Vintage Gamer. I've also made a couple of podcast appearances outside of the Vintage Gamer. First, I was on the Gaming Uncensored podcast recently, talking about the PS3 and Wii. It was a lot of fun chatting with Jamie and Tommy, and I really had a great time doing that, so thanks guys for inviting me on. I've also started doing a semi-regular bit on Michael and Evo's Wingin' It, about games for large drunken groups. Truthfully, it was because I figured somebody ought to start talking about games besides Killer Bunnies, but beyond just that, it seems to be going quite well. I've taken on a persona, a guy named Rufus, who seems to have somewhat of an attitude, which is rather fun to play. And so far I've done a segment on the card game Bang, and one on a drinking game called One Red Hen, for which I actually got the help of Steve Ely from Escape Pod and Jason Adams of the Random Signal podcast. So thanks to you guys for that. The final big piece of news is that my wife, Murr, got a regular job doing work for Lulu.com, which I think is totally awesome. However, it does mean that our daughter will be in preschool full-time now, so I think I'm going to try to give her plenty of attention when we're at home with her. And because of that, it's a little unclear how this will affect my podcasting schedule. So far, I'm still planning to get out a show around every 2 weeks, but we'll see how it goes. When I know more, I'll let you know. That's about it for the news segment for the show. I'll be back with a discussion of the computer game Fool's Errand and other puzzle games by Cliff Johnson right after this.
Hi, my name's Alex Knight, and I once missed 2 days of class because, well, I was playing Halo.
I took the time to make it to level 35 on Dr. Mario.
I deprived myself of sleep and nourishment to play through Metal Gear Solid 2.
I listen to Gaming Uncensored.
And I listen to Gaming Uncensored.
I listen to Gaming Uncensored. And you can too.
Your source for all the latest news and information from the gaming industry. It's the Gaming Uncensored podcast, only found on gaminguncensored.com.
In 1988, I took a job with Dartmouth College, working on server software for their new email system, Blitzmail. Originally, it was a part-time job, as I was still in college, but after graduation, I went full-time for just the summer. Together with me were two friends, Andy, who was doing some interface work, and Derek, who was working on the manual. He was a technical writer. Despite our newly employed status, we were still a bit short on cash, so we came up with a deal. We would buy 3 pieces of Macintosh software and share them, each person keeping one of the original disks. Hopefully these guys aren't going to come after me now. The first one, the one that I ended up with, was a copy of the Semantic Disk Tools. And I forget what the second one was, but the third was the jewel of the deal, The Fool's Errand, programmed and designed by one man, Cliff Johnson. It's too simple to say that The Fool's Errand is a puzzle game for the Mac. In many ways, I'd say that it is the puzzle game for the Mac, and it's a shame that it's not supported on the most recent systems, which I'll talk a bit more on that later. The theme and art of The Fool's Errand is based on the cards of the Rider-Waite tarot deck. If you're not familiar with that, it's pretty much the standard tarot deck that people use. And along with that consists of a story about a fool and a quest given to him by the sun to unlock the Book of Thoth, defeat the High Priestess, and thus save the land. The story is represented by a large scroll, one section of which is displayed on the screen at a time. Each section has a puzzle associated with it. When the game begins, only a few pieces of the scroll are revealed, but as you progress and solve puzzles, more parts of the scroll and their corresponding puzzles are unlocked. Each puzzle also relates to the next stage in the story. So, for example, if one puzzle is a coded phrase, that phrase will be found in the next part of the narration. Most of the puzzles are word puzzles. There are crossword puzzles and word search puzzles, usually built around some sort of theme. So, for example, you might have a puzzle that features the suits of the tarot. There are coded messages using a simple substitution cipher. There are also 3x3 word squares, where the letter in the middle square is locked, and you have to unscramble the letters and spell 6 words vertically and horizontally. There are so-called word formula puzzles, where you click on buttons and add letters to the beginning and the end of a set of letters. Or you could also click a button and reverse the entire set, all to build up a sentence. And my least favorite are the mask puzzles, where you have to click on buttons that place shapes on the screen that, if you do them in the correct order, will resolve to a short word or series of letters. I really do hate those. I find them really difficult to figure out. There are also non-word puzzles, such as jigsaws. I'd probably call these grid scrambles, where a picture is cut into a series of squares and scrambled up, and then you have to de-scramble it just by swapping the tiles around. And there's a nifty card game where you have to figure out the rules as you go and then eventually beat your opponent. And then there are mazes. Some of those start out hidden and have some teleporting areas, so basically you have to navigate around, find the walls, and also find the certain spots which will teleport you unexpectedly across the maze, and of course not in the direction that you want to go most of the time. These are not very easy to navigate. Others of these mazes involve tracing out a path, which is initially revealed and then hidden as you try to move along it. So you'd click down and then trace along the path. Of course, it's invisible at that point. If you screw up, it makes a rather obnoxious noise and then stops. And there is at least one puzzle that depends on how the Mac OS works. To say more about it would give too much away. All of these puzzles are presented in a very intuitive style. So for example, to solve the ciphers, you click on an encoded letter and then just type the clear text letter. It will replace all the letters in the phrase with the new one, basically swap one with the other. To swap puzzle pieces, you just click on one piece and then the one to swap it with. You can also select multiple pieces and swap them with another region of pieces. That saves time if you're trying to move a big block of pieces to another location. Each puzzle is also quite attractive, given that it is being rendered on a 9-inch monochrome screen, and it really does evoke the style of the Rider-Waite deck. Along with the puzzles that are associated with each story point, there is one meta-puzzle called the Sun's Map. Like the other picture puzzles, it is a map cut on a grid, with each piece corresponding to a puzzle or plot point in the game. As you'd expect, initially the only pieces available are the ones that go with the original set of puzzles. But as you unlock puzzles, you unlock the corresponding pieces. When all the pieces are revealed, you can unscramble the map, which leads to the final set of puzzles in the game, the 14 treasures of the Book of Thoth. The clues to these puzzles are sprinkled through the solutions of the original set of the puzzles and the text of the story. So it really is a broad meta-puzzle across the entire game. Now, I spent many hours on this game, possibly to the detriment of my work. Alright, probably to the detriment of my work. Probably to the detriment of my relationship at the time as well. On that last point, I probably can't say that it was definitely worth all the time I put in, but I'm quite happy now, so maybe it was worth all the time that I put in. There is a good mix of puzzles available. Some of them are devilishly hard. That Mac OS one took a very long time to figure out, and I've already mentioned that those mask puzzles drive me crazy. But some of them are just easy enough to keep you going, so you never get quite stuck, of course, until you end up with just hard puzzles, in which case you're just kind of plowing through it just to solve the game. After the success of The Fool's Errand, it was only a matter of time before Cliff Johnson created another puzzle game. Now, before he began designing puzzles, he was a burgeoning filmmaker. To finance his first film, he volunteered to build monsters for his local amusement park's Laugh in the Dark ride for only $1,000. This led to a short career as a monster creator for amusement parks, taking him to 5 parks across the country. This particular experience was folded into his next game, At the Carnival. Originally, it was supposed to be part of a series of games called The Puzzle Gallery, using an updated version of the Fool's Errand game engine, basically in color with a slightly cleaned-up interface. However, the publisher, Miles Computing, went bankrupt soon after the publication of the game, so those plans ended there. Where The Fool's Errand has a strong story and a complex meta-puzzle, At the Carnival is mainly a set of puzzles centered around the theme of an amusement park. A very nasty and poorly run amusement park, I might add. Hopefully, only slightly based on Cliff's experience. If you play the game, you'll understand what I mean. Many of the individual puzzles are simpler, consisting mostly of word searches, mazes, and grid scrambles, without as many of the unique puzzles found in The Fool's Errand. Also, all the puzzles start out unlocked. However, many also have more than one part, so solving one part leads to a new piece of the puzzle that needs to be solved to mark it off as done. So, for example, to complete the puzzle called Ticket Booth, you need to first solve a picture scramble, shows you the picture of the ticket booth. Then you have to solve 2 word formulas, consisting of a question and the witty answer, again demonstrating how poorly run this park is. So technically there are more puzzles, but they're just of a simpler nature, or you can think of each group of puzzles as one big puzzle, just consisting of more stages. Individually, each of these stages is easy to solve, but can take a long time as a whole. Because of this, the length of a particular puzzle, or group of puzzles, can get a little tedious, but you can always save. And when this game came out, I of course got it for my dad for either his birthday or Christmas. He's a big puzzle fan too. And since I was in town at the time, I took advantage of my access to his computer and the game to play it through. I'm sure that didn't help my grad school career much. And while I did enjoy it, I didn't get the feeling of satisfaction and completion that I got with The Fool's Errand. I believe what I'd missed in that was the overarching story, and some of the sheer difficulty of the individual puzzles. The final game in the Macintosh series, I probably should have mentioned that At the Carnival was also a Macintosh game, this final game was 3 and 3, and that is the numeral 3 in and the word 3 spelled out. With this one, Johnson went back to the original metapuzzle notion, featuring a story of a numeral 3 lost in the computer who just wants to return home to her spreadsheet. She travels around within the computer, meeting letters and symbols and negotiating puzzles to find her way home. The structure of the game is a bit of an amalgam of Fool's Errand and At the Carnival. Like The Fool's Errand, you start with a small set of unlocked puzzles and unlock more as you go. However, this story is not conveyed through an accompanying text, but directly through the animated sequences and word balloons in the puzzles. And as with At the Carnival, there are multi-part puzzles, but they are much harder. And as this is a plot-based game, the tailored puzzles have returned as well, so there are specific, very difficult puzzles, other than, you know, so the generic word search and things like that. Speaking of that, the puzzles themselves are also quite different in this one, moving away from the text-based puzzles in the first two, and moving more towards number and manipulation-based puzzles. So, for example, there is a puzzle consisting of a series of pistons that the 3 has to move across, You know, basically get from one end, the left side, to the right side. The pistons move up and down depending on the numbers below them. So, for example, if a piston has a 2 below it, it'll move up 2 spaces. If it has a negative 1, it'll move down 1 space. By placing 2 pistons at the same level, the 3 will move from one to the other. But you have to be careful. If you move a piston so that it's at the same level as the one to the left, the 3 will move backwards. Not quite what you want to do. And you can actually get a chain of this, so it'll actually move backwards more than one. So you kind of want to stagger the pistons to the left as you move forward, just to avoid backtracking too much. There are also some puzzles where you need to line up a grid of symbols to meet certain logical rules. So, for example, you need to get certain Roman numbers in a column, and certain other Roman numbers in a row, and other Roman numbers can't be next to each other, things like that. These are very, very tricky because when you meet one rule, you might violate another, and actually only one rule at a time is displayed. So you might find yourself going through, reviewing the rules, and going, oh, I screwed up the one that I'd already solved 3 or 4 times before. Now, as I mentioned, as with the Fool's Errand, there is a meta puzzle to solve. As you solve each puzzle, a letter is added to the letter parliament, a separate puzzle in the game. And once all the letters are found, you can unscramble the parliament and enter the endgame puzzle. Again, just like Fool's Errand. So I understand, as I haven't actually fully played this one yet. I did get it from my dad as well, and was in Buffalo at the time, I believe. Might have gotten it in 1990. In any case, I think what happened was that the theme didn't really grab me at the time. And since discovering its availability online, again, more on that later, I have started playing it again at work in between compiles. I do have to say, though, it's pretty tough. Unfortunately, it does require a little more brain power than a minute at a time can really give. So it doesn't quite work as well as my Pente games. However, my Pente games aren't going too well either. That minute at a time isn't even enough time for that. 3 and 3 was originally published in 1989 by CinemaWare, which went out of business in 1991, so then it was picked up by Inline Design, until 1995, at which point they went out of business. You know, if I look at the publishing history here, I'm beginning to think that Cliff Johnson is a bit cursed. My understanding is that Cliff also didn't get fully paid for 3 and 3, not sure which company it was. So there is a bit of checkered history there. After 3 and 3, Cliff Johnson went on to design, along with a group of people, 3 games for the Philips CD-i, a 4th-generation console that was sort of an interactive DVD system of its time, except of course it used CDs instead of DVDs. Again, the console was not a huge success, although the Hanna-Barbera game he designed was apparently the best-selling game for the platform. So, within that platform, very good success for him there. In addition to these games, there were a few ports done for The Fool's Errand and At the Carnival. Both of them were ported to MS-DOS at a lower resolution and consequently lousy graphics. Cliff Johnson on his site strongly recommends you don't try them. There was also an unofficial port of The Fool's Errand done for the Amiga, which adds color and cleans up the graphics a little bit. If you do have an Amiga, you can actually get those. There's actually a link to that page on his site, if you're interested. All of these games that I've mentioned are unfortunately out of print. However, unlike many other games in the show, not all is lost. Cliff Johnson has made all of the Macintosh games available for free on his website, and the MS-DOS games, but again, as I said, he doesn't recommend it. And I'll point to that website in the show notes. If you're running on a Mac OS system that supports OS 9 in some form, such as Classic Mode, you can download them from his website and just run them directly. On Windows, there's actually a pretty decent set of files for the Executor emulator, which is what I've been using. I know that people aren't very fond of the Executor emulator, but I got up and running in no time at all, so I was pretty pleased with that. It does have a time limit on it currently. I think it runs out in July of 2007, But I'm assuming that's going to be extended again when that time limit comes up. And if it doesn't, well, you have 6 or 7 months to play these games. Ironically, on my MacBook Pro, I've had the hardest time running these games as classic mode is not supported. I've tried using some other emulators, such as Basilisk and VMac, but I've had a lot of trouble with that. So if someone out there figures it out, let me know. I think I could use a little direction. In addition, if you want to support Cliff Johnson and also get the 3 CDI games, you can buy a CD with all of his games, all 6 of them on him. I'm not sure whether that will work on the Intel Macs, but it might be worth a try. Well, you can always send him an email and find out. And it will certainly support his development efforts. And what development efforts, you ask? Well, for the past, I believe it is 4 years, Cliff has been working on a new game. Coming out any day now, as far as I can tell, really and for true, is The Fool and His Money, the long-awaited sequel to The Fool's Errand. It appears to have a similar form to The Fool's Errand, but this time with a moon's map instead of a sun's map. I, of course, have pre-ordered a copy for my dad, and I've actually gotten a copy for myself as well. After that, he has a sequel to 3 and 3 planned called 3's a Crowd, so if you're a fan of vintage games, go out there and support a veteran in his self-publishing efforts. And that's about it for what I have to say about Fool's Errand. I will be back with some final words right after this.
Hi, this is Richard Denning here with news of UK Games Expo 2007. The UK has a long tradition of gaming in all forms, but we look with envy at mainland Europe and the USA, and their large international games conventions attracting to tens of thousands of players of all forms of games. In the UK, we are very much in their shadow. The UK Games Expo team believes that the UK deserves a showcase convention of the very best in the world of gaming, whether it be miniature gaming, board games, card games, role-playing games, or computer games. 2007 sees the launch of UK Games Expo in Birmingham, in the Clarendon Suites, just off the Hagley Road, on the 2nd and 3rd of June 2007. We will have a large trade hall offering all forms of gaming. There will be demonstrations and participation games of all sorts. There will be some fun pick-up games such as radio-controlled events. You will be able to sit down and try out massively multiplayer online events and have a go at some LAN gaming. If you are a serious competition type player, you can enter tournaments in board games and war games. If you want to know more about the event, check out www.ukgamesexpo.co.uk and keep your ear open because I'll be back with some more news in a few months' time.
The first piece of final business are the remaining copies of Politica. I've heard from the missing person for the first two, who was Jeff Myers. Congratulations to him. As far as the other two, I've received one of them from one coworker and am waiting on the other still. I've done the requisite dice rolls, and those two go to Matt Sears and Tim Medin. So contact me with your address, and I'll ship those out as soon as possible. And now that the Christmas rush is over, I'll also be getting some other promotional material out to those people who requested it. Beyond that, there was a lot of nice feedback on the Sherlock Holmes episode, but nothing that I specifically feel needs comment here. So I think I'll just offer up a general thank you to you all. I'm really glad you enjoyed it, and I'm also very glad that I've inspired some of you to pick it up. I think you'll find that it's well worth it. So beyond that, if you have feedback on this show or any other, or the podcast in general, you can send that via email to vintagejim@gmail.com or Skype via username jvsquare, or you can leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net, or you can comment on the forum thread at BoardGameGeek or rpg.net. Or rec.games.board, or wherever else I manage to post to. I will, of course, try to respond to all comments, wherever they may be sent. And thus concludes yet another enigmatic episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres, and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer will return in a couple of weeks with another game from the past. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.